The following is a paid program on AM 1220 KLBB. The views expressed do not necessarily represent the views of the station owner or management or Endurance Broadcasting, LLC.
Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face.
Welcome aboard, everyone. You are listening to Boating with Wolf Marine and Tetzlaff Yacht Sales. I am Eric Wolf. I am the co-owner of Wolf Marine. We are located 1 mile north of downtown Stillwater at the intersection of Highway 95 and 96. And you can reach me at area code 651-439-2341. Check us out on the web, wolfmarine.net. If need be, you can email me at info@wolfmarine.net. Off to my port side, I have...
Hi, my name is John Tetzlaff with Tetzlaff Yacht Sales. We sell and list boats, and I'll tell you what, we need them. We're selling a lot, so if you need your boat sold, give us a call. If you want to check out our website, it's TetzlaffYachtSales.com. You can call us at 651-214-9463. You can stop in anytime. If I'm in the office, if there's a note on my door that says I'm showing boats, you can definitely give me a call on the cell phone. But the address is 575 Main Street North, right downtown Stillwater in front of the West Marine. Go to the West Marine and stop in and say hi. Anyway, say we've got a great show coming up today. We've got a couple of folks here with the DNR, Lisa Dugan and Jake Willis. And we also have a person from the Step Up program, Daisy Lopez. She goes to South High School in Minneapolis, and she's sitting in kind of checking us out to see how we do our show here, and we'll get critiqued when we're done because she's going to take notes and give it to us when we're all done. But anyway, we've got some good questions, and hopefully we'll have some good answers from our DNR folks here. And we're going to start out talking about Sophia's Law. There is a little glitch in the program, but definitely a good law that's coming up. I don't think there's anything negative about it. I think it's all positive, and I think Lisa's going to step in. And Jake, if you step in anytime, you guys take turns.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you guys for having us out again and being able to talk about these updates. Hopefully, it seems like this is a much accepted update by the boating community for Sophia's Law. With this last legislative session that was passed, there was a delay in the effective date of Sophia's Law. So it switched from May 1st, 2017 to May 1st, 2018, which I think will be a great thing for the boaters to be able to have that extra time to be able to become compliant with the law, be able to get these detectors that are now available. And on my side, it's a great opportunity for another year of educating the boaters on the dangers of carbon monoxide.
Oh, definitely. I think that, I even think it's overdue. I think, boy, this should have been a law a long time ago because it's just, that'd be the worst thing in the world to lose a loved one to something like this that can be easily checked or brought into law like it is now. So, anyway, I've got some questions I'm going to throw at you guys, and we'll go from there. I guess my first question is, what are the changes with Sophia's Law?
Well, the law itself will remain the same. All of the requirements will remain the same. The only thing that changed was the effective date. So again, it'll be May 1st, 2018. And just another little overview on the requirements. There was a mailing that went out to registered boaters in Minnesota where they received their three carbon monoxide warning stickers and an informational brochure on the dangers of carbon monoxide and what this law requires. So those should be in the boaters' hands. If they want to put them on their boats this summer, they're able to. They wouldn't have to have it on until the start of next season. But again, another year to let those on your boat, passengers, operators, know the spots on your boat where carbon monoxide does tend to be the more dangerous areas.
Okay, all right. What are the requirements of Sophia's Law?
So it would be the detectors on motorboats that have the enclosed space, a toilet area, and a galley area with a sink. If you have all three of those, whether you're gasoline or diesel powered, you would be required to have a marine carbon monoxide detector. Whether it's hardwired or battery operated, you're able to use either. The key there is checking to make sure that it is a marine grade detector, and that will either say it on the actual detector or on the packaging from the manufacturer.
Okay, and now this isn't one of the questions, but I'm going to throw it in there. I'm going to try to throw you for a loop here.
No, uh-oh, we'll see.
It's not that hard. Where is there any Is there a better place to put the detector, high, low, in between on the ceiling or wall? Or
so I would refer back to the manufacturer's suggestions, but carbon monoxide actually tends to be the same density as air. So whereas smoke detectors, you might want to put them a little bit higher, carbon monoxide detectors are able to be placed at any level. But again, if the manufacturer has a specific requirement, check those first.
Sure, sure. Okay. And what kind of detector is required in order to comply with the law?
It would be a marine-grade carbon monoxide detector. And something to note that there was a recall on the first batch of detectors that were brought out to the public. They have now been, they're recalled. They're now back out at your marinas, marine dealers. So check out your locations within your boating community, see where they're available. But there will also be additional manufacturers who will be putting more battery powered detectors in the market this fall. So this should help greatly with the supply and demand. There'll be some available for everybody who needs them, and hopefully help with the cost of those, a little bit more price competition.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out, though the law does not take effect until next year, I think it's best to be proactive on this. And I do have the detectors at our ship store at the marina there. They're reselling for $124.99. And I think John and I have talked about this in the past, but you know, don't wait until the law, until you have to have them. I think be proactive, take the steps, because if something were to happen between now and when the law takes effect, you'd never ever forgive yourself for not having the proper detectors on there. And there again, it's very important that they are marine style. Detectors. If you look at the RV style or even the home style, that they're all very similar in looks, but they do have different standards for the requirements. So make sure that they are the boating style CO detectors.
And I guess that kind of brings us into our next question here, is what kind of detector is required in order to comply with the law?
So like Eric was saying, the marine detector, make sure that it either says it on the detector, but like kind of playing out what Eric was saying, that these detectors are tested at the harsh marine environments that they're going to see. So it's graded for moisture, high temperatures, and vibration, whereas your home detectors don't have to meet those high of standards. And especially in Minnesota, if we're storing our boats during the winter, they need to be able to last throughout the harsh winters, the harsh summers, those heat extremes that they're going to see.
Yeah, I think they were testing these things. You got to remember, in a boat, your temperature ranges, you know, in the wintertime from below zero to, you know, you're probably looking at 125 degrees in a boat that is enclosed with no air conditioning on. So, you know, that's really extreme when it comes to temperature variations, and that's where the boating style CO detectors are tested and approved for. So.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm sure it's probably in the information you get when you buy the unit, but I would think that there's a way to test that besides pushing the button. I wonder if you can somehow simulate getting the carbon monoxide in there somehow to test them.
I haven't even opened one of the boxes yet, so I haven't really looked at them. Maybe that's something I should probably do when I get back to the shop, just to look at them, just to see what's all entailed for putting them together. But I think they're all enclosed. They're pretty much dummy-proof from what I understand. It's a matter of hanging it on the wall, probably, I don't know, but I'm guessing probably pulling some type of a plastic tab to activate the battery, and they're good then for 5 years from what I understand.
Right, and something to watch out for, too, is as these detectors are on the shelves a little bit longer, the sensor is actually started by the date of manufacturer. So double-check those detectors that you're getting to make sure it hasn't been sitting on the shelf for a longer amount of time. And I guess that also brings another point up to check older detectors that you may have. Anything past 2012, the sensor probably is not going to be working, whereas you could push the button, like John is saying, you might get the beep, you might be able to test it, but the sensor is the piece that is actually going to be measuring the carbon monoxide, and those tend to have a 5 to 7 year lifespan.
Well, maybe that's something we need to come up with, is an actual tester that would get that carbon monoxide, whatever.
Simulate it.
I was thinking of that big word, but it just wasn't coming to me at that moment. I let Eric take over on that one. anyway, so how does a boater get the three warning stickers?
They were mailed out by the DNR, so you should have them in the mail. They went to all registered boats 19 feet and greater. So although 19 feet has no bearing on the law, that is a standard size where you might start to see those three features in that size of boat. They're going to be more likely to be required to have that. If you have a documented boat or a boat that did not receive the stickers, they are available. You can certainly call the DNR. They're available at all deputy registrar locations, at many of your local marinas and marine dealers. So check it out with the folks who know. They'll be able to direct you if you do still need them.
Again, for those that have documented boats or those that are registered in Wisconsin that are still running on the river, I do have those stickers at our ship store also. You know, they were mailed out to us by the DNR, so I have a pile of them there. So when you come down to buy your CO detector, you can certainly take the stickers at the same time.
Definitely. And when you come down to rent a slip at Wolf Marine, because you just bought a boat through Tetzloff Yacht Sales, it's all hand in hand. It's all right there. We make it real easy for you to get compliant. Anyway, what about the offense and the cost? I mean, obviously, there's going to be people out there that are not going to know about it. They're just going to say, the heck with it. What's going on there?
Well, from an enforcement perspective, when we first start out with this law, it's mostly an educational type thing. You know, a lot of people think we're out looking to generate revenue from the state, and that's absolutely not the case. Most importantly, we want people to be safe while they're out on the river, while they're boating. The fine amounts are going to vary by the county. It will be a misdemeanor offense, as all natural resource offenses are. I don't know the exact fine amount, but it will vary by county. So depending on if you're actually in Washington County or elsewhere on the Mississippi.
Okay, and as Eric was kind of alluding to earlier, no matter where you're from, if you're on our waters?
Yeah, and that's a question I've gotten frequently on the water as people are starting to get the stickers and get information about this law coming out. Any boat operating on Minnesota waters will be required to comply with the requirements of this law. So that includes boats registered in Wisconsin or any other state when they operate in Minnesota.
And how are they going to get that information? I mean, I know that ignorance is you know, whatever, but how do they know about it? How are they going to find out?
Well, they can go to the DNR website. When they pick up a Minnesota boating guide, they should know. And we're hoping that we'll get help from the marinas in making sure that people are aware of it when they are, commuting boats that are just coming through to try to make sure people are aware. Again, the idea isn't for us to go out and write as many tickets as we can. The idea is to educate and hopefully maybe save some lives from having these detectors on board these vessels.
So I think most of their information is going to be coming from a radio show called Boating with Wolf Marine and Tetzloff Yacht Sales.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't know about that show, I guess then I don't know what's, you know. Anyway, they should know about our show, dang it. Okay, here's another question for you. Why send the mailing to owners of boats who do not need the stickers?
So this is a great informational opportunity that we have to inform all boaters. So although they might not be required to have the stickers or the detector in the boat, that doesn't limit them to not being in danger of carbon monoxide poisoning. There's been countless times that there's, you know, we can't count the close calls that people have with towing a boat too close to the back, or towing a tube too close to the back of the boat is what I'm trying to say. And that's going to be a very dangerous spot where carbon monoxide is really going to accumulate, and it's a danger for whoever is going to be pulled in the back of that tube. So make sure that you have a long enough line, you're pulled close enough away. Those instances happen, and many times in the summer that, you know, we don't hear about how many times somebody got sick or ill and, you know, had a close call with carbon monoxide. So hopefully we can treat this piece as an educational opportunity for those who operate and have people on your boats. Let anyone know who's going to be on the dangers of it and areas where it may accumulate.
All right. And I was just going to say, you know, if you're afraid to call, you see something that you don't feel is right, you know, observe and report. I mean, don't hesitate to call the DNR or the sheriffs or whoever and tell them you see something that's not that doesn't seem right, because I'll tell you what, they probably rather get that call than the one where they're diving down to find a body or trying to revive someone. Yeah. So definitely if you see something, call.
Yeah, and I think we're coming to the end of our first session here. We've had some great information so far, and I want everybody to stay tuned to KLBB 1220 AM radio, because we will be right back.
Thank you.
A convenient location and protected bay. Shouldn't that be where you harbor your boat? If so, dock your boat at Wolf Marine in Stillwater. Hello, this is Eric Wolf. After all, why have a boat if you can't get out onto the water and enjoy it? My grandparents, along with my father, established this marina at the intersection of Highway 95 and 96, just a mile north of Stillwater in 1957. But being just north of downtown, you avoid heavy traffic that keeps you from getting out onto the water. And in our protected bay, we have hundreds of slips ranging in size from 16 to 50 feet, so we can accommodate a variety of boats. Not sure if this is the best place to keep your boat? Come see me. I can answer your questions so you can decide the best place to dock your boat. And because Wolf Marine is a three-generation family-owned marina, you can count on consistency from year to year. Talk to me and get out on the water faster at Wolf Marine.
Hello, this is John Tetzloff of Tetzloff Yacht Sales. If you are thinking about getting out on the water in a nice used boat, now is the time to talk to me. Whether you are looking at a houseboat, cruiser, motor yacht, or something else, and with the largest selection of boats in the area, not only do we have boats in Stillwater, but we also broker boats up and down the St. Croix, Mississippi, Lake Minnetonka, all over North America, and even overseas. I will work hard for you before and after the sale. To enjoy the water this summer, come visit TetzloffYachtSales.com. Welcome back, everybody, to our second half of Boating with Wolf Marine and Tetzloff Yacht Sales. You'll note that I always say Wolf Marine first, because Wolf Marine has been around a lot longer than Tetzloff Yacht Sales, and I think it's pretty cool that they're we're partnering on this show. I mean, Wolf Marine's got some great history, and it's family-owned, has been since the beginning, and I think, obviously, if anybody ever wants a great marina, they should check out Wolf Marine, because it's a nice marina. It's a nice location. You never have any traffic to worry about. So I just buttered up Eric, so now it's his turn. Again, John Tetzloff with Tetzloff Yacht Sales, TetzloffYachtSales.com.
Ah, geez, what a great introduction. Thank you, John. I'm humbled for sure, but I do appreciate that. And I am Eric Wolf. I am the co-owner of Wolf Marine. We are a marina on the St. Croix River. We're located 1 mile north of the Stillwater Bridge by water. We do have slips ranging in size from 16 to 50 foot, so we can accommodate most everybody. So if you're looking for a slip on the St. Croix, whether it be all summer, monthly, weekly, or even daily, come give us a call, 651-439-2341. Send us an email, info@wolfmarine.net. Check us out on the web, wolfmarine.net.
And we just want to welcome back our great guests from the DNR, Jake Willis and Lisa Dugan. We just had some great information on Sophia's Law and the update on that. And again, don't wait for the law to take effect. Go ahead and get those things in there. And you just don't want that worst-case scenario, because that would be the end of my boating career if something like that happened. I could never look at a boat again. But anyway, I think we want to talk about another topic that you guys have coming up.
Correct. Coming up around the 4th of July holiday, we have an operation called Operation Drywater, which is a law enforcement cooperative focus between us and partner agencies with the various counties to deter alcohol abuse and boating under the influence.
Yeah, that definitely is not a good situation. I mean, everybody wants to go out and have a good time, but at the same time, that designated driver rule applies not only to on land, but definitely on the water, because unfortunately, it goes both ways, and we want to have a good time, but we want to have that safe time.
Absolutely, and a frequent question that I get from people when I'm out working in the boat, and sometimes just when people approach me in the gas station or wherever, is about open containers on watercraft. Open containers are legal to have on watercraft, including the operator of the boat. However, operating under the influence is illegal. So if you are going to have some adult-type beverages on your watercraft, make sure that you designate one person to be the boat operator to make sure that they're not over that 0.08 threshold.
Can I ask a question on what would be the definition of operating a boat?
So the way that Minnesota BUI law reads is it has to be a motorboat underway. So if your boat is anchored or you're paddling or oaring, it doesn't qualify for boating under the influence. However, as soon as you're operating that watercraft with a motor, even if it's just a trolling motor, then it does fall under the BUI law.
That's good information. That's something that I had never known. And, you know, so if you're out there and want to have an adult beverage or two or six or ten or whatever you want, throw anchor, you know. You'll see a lot of the people out there rafting up, having a good time, and boy, there's not much trouble you can get into if you throw an anchor and just sit there. So keep the engines off.
Although if you're going to have 10, I'd say definitely wear your PFD, even if you're not underway with a motor.
You might want to spread those 10 out. They'd probably want you to spread that 10 over maybe a one-month period or something like that. But we know how it goes. But anyway, another question I have is the swim platform, and I see people on their swim platforms all the time, and it's my understanding that you can be on it if the boat isn't underway or the boat isn't running, but if it is, there's a pretty hefty fine, I think.
Yeah, correct. It is a misdemeanor offense to ride on the gunwale, on the bow, or on the stern in the case of a swim platform when it's not enclosed and intended for passenger occupancy. That is illegal under Minnesota state law, unless you're not underway. If you're adrift or you're anchored, you're fine to swim off the boat and use a swim platform or sit wherever you like on the boat as long as you're not underway.
And I have a pet peeve of I see these people with their kids hanging onto the railing, legs dangling over the front of the bow. I mean, I know it's an educational thing. People don't think about what could happen. I look at that as that kid slips, he's hamburger.
Yeah, the propeller, as we all know, can be extremely dangerous, and especially with children who are smaller and can fit through railings and pontoons and different things that adults may not slip through,
right?
Then they'll go under the boat very quickly, which would end in tragedy.
And it just drives me nuts. Every time I see somebody with any person that's hanging off of the railing, feet dangling over the front of the boat whilst the boat is underway, I shake my head and I think, what could happen? And it would be very tragic.
And that is a stop that myself and our law enforcement partners with on the St. Croix, Washington County, and Wisconsin officers will make that stop to try to prevent that tragedy from happening.
Is it against the law for them to do that?
It depends on the watercraft. If they're small children, if they can slip through the railings, it may not be illegal, but it may be a safety issue we're going to address.
Yes.
Again, the law states on the gunwale or the bow or the stern if you're outside the railings. So depending on the watercraft, it could be illegal, but if there's railings, it's most likely not illegal.
Okay. So, captains, keep your passengers well in the middle of the boat, off of the sides of the boats. Keep them safe. Keep the PFDs on the people also.
Yep, that's a good one. I always have to throw this one in there. When they get on your boat, tell them how to operate the toilet.
Yeah.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
What can and can't go in the toilet.
Yeah, because you don't want that breaking down. Anyway, getting back to the your operation that we have coming up.
So I can go ahead with some stats that we've had that are definitely something to keep in mind as you're going out over the 4th of July weekend. Last year in 2006, 53% of our boating fatalities listed alcohol as a factor, which is definitely something to consider. That's a higher percentage than we've seen in the past. It's over half of the fatalities including alcohol. So whereas they might drown because they don't have their life jacket on, alcohol is a factor in that many of the boating fatalities. Again, like Jake said, designate a sober skipper when you're going to be out on the boat. Have somebody that's going to take you, knows how to operate the boat safely around the water and also off the water to get you home safe.
Yeah, it's really important for that. Or, like we were talking earlier, throw anchor or keep it in the slip.
Exactly. And again, I just want people to remember that we're not preaching. We're not bringing these experts in here to talk about all the bad things that can happen. But you know what? They happen, and we just want to make sure you're aware and what you can do, what you should do, because again, you don't want that worst case scenario popping up.
Well, and I will say that, you know, from an enforcement perspective, just like when I was talking about Sophia's Law, the idea isn't for us to be out there generating revenue. From a law enforcement perspective, for us to arrest a boating under the influence operator, it's extremely time intensive. It takes a long time and a lot of people. It's difficult to transport someone for processing from a boat. So I'm going to have to get another officer involved that can transport them and then find a place to put my boat. And there's a lot of steps to undertake. However, from our perspective, it's very worth it for the safety that's extended from that enforcement and hopefully from the deterrent of knowing that Operation Drywater is going on and that we're out looking for those offenses. Similar to on the road, they have the Toward Zero Death program. We have Operation Drywater.
And again, I think I want to bring up the fact that, too, if you do get pulled over, I think attitude, although you're, boy, if you're under the influence, you're probably not thinking right, but I think attitude plays a huge part in how everything turns out. If you're pulling someone over and they're completely negative and they're mad at the world and they're mad at you guys, I don't think that's going to, you know, if they can think about being as nice as they can, although under a bad situation, I think that's only going to help.
Yeah, and I, in my years as a police officer, I've encountered every type of drunk person, from completely compliant to passed out to angry at the world to blaming me for the trouble they're in. And I do know that when the courts look at it later on, the penalty phase is certainly affected in a judge's eyes as to how it's going to go with the severity of the penalties. And boating under the influence penalties can be comparable or more so than driving under the influence.
Sure. Okay. Anyway, back to the operation. Or more stats that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I think that covers it, just the awareness that you'll see more of an enforcement present over next weekend, before 4th of July weekend, out on the water. And again, better to, you know, have gone to jail than have to go to somebody's family or the victim of somebody who was killed by a drunk boater. So
yeah,
keep that in perspective. And
And I think we were going to bring up the fact that we've got a big party going on, and it's going to be a good time. Everything's going to be fun. Hopefully the weather turns out great. But I think Officer Jake here wanted to maybe make a little request or talk about how they look at it.
And we're talking about the Sexy Drink Party that's just north of the Stillwater Bridge here, and it's happening this weekend.
And from an enforcement perspective, you know, there's a thing where people think that we don't want people to be out there having a good time, and it couldn't be more the opposite. We very much want people on the water. We want them to have a good time. I'm okay with people having drinks. We just want it to go safely. I love being on the water, too, part of the reason that I do this job. However, when we get big party barges like this or large groups of boats together, we'd like some help from the participants to leave us a path to get into that crowd. In the past, emergency responders have had trouble getting to medical emergencies that were in the middle of this crowd because they can't get their watercraft through to get in there.
Yeah, so you're basically asking to please leave a passageway for emergency personnel.
Absolutely. Just a gap big enough that we can at least get a boat through there to get to people that we need to get to.
And one thing that that is encouraging about seeing all these boats out there, the vast majority of them are probably having what we call an adult beverage. And also the vast majority are anchored and in place. And many times they're there for a day, maybe two.
And that's even when these events get rather big and seem to be a nuisance to some people. Overwhelmingly, I would say at least 90% or more of those people are doing it right, and they're doing it safely, even if they are having alcoholic beverages. We just want to help that 10% not cause tragedy for the other ones.
And what we also have to point out is those that are behaving, that are doing things right, have to kind of influence those that may be tempted not to be doing things right. So, you know, say, hey, man, I know you've had a couple. Yeah, just tie up here, throw an anchor, and sit with us for maybe, you know, 5-6 hours, and shoot the breeze or whatever. But you know, everybody has to watch each other out there and encourage one another to do things the right way. right way.
And that's the goal of these programs and of the enforcement in general, is the deterrence of the behavior in the first place. I would much rather nobody operate under the influence than have to arrest operators under the influence.
Yeah. You know, and we're coming to the end. I mean, that went by fast. I mean, when they go by fast, that means it was a good show. We had some good guests. Again, we'd like to thank Lisa Dugan and Jake Willis from the DNR coming in here and talking about some good issues. And I want to mention the fact that we got to cut it short because I don't want to lose our good show, or I'm sorry, our music, Kashmir by Led Zeppelin, the interview, because I got my shirt on right now, and it probably doesn't happen a lot on KLBB, but anyway, thank you guys for checking in. I'm John Tetzloff, TetzloffYachtSales.com.
I'm Eric Wolf from Wolf Marine, WolfMarine.net, and we'll see you again next week.